Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with a rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down on Almighty Baller Radio, part of Dash Radio. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, with my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Justin. Coming off a surprisingly just comfortable Cavaliers win, right? Like, that never happens.
It's been a long time. Like, I can't remember the last quality, easy win over a good opponent in... It might have been, like, since the playoffs last year.
Now there are a couple games against the Magic in there.
Well, now, I guess we blew out the Celtics, but I don't think that really counts as a quality opponent.
No, it really doesn't. It was funny. I was on the recap last night, and the fourth quarter started, and I just didn't start writing till like there were like 4 minutes left, because I was like, they're gonna blow this. Like, they're gonna let them back into the game, and they kind of almost did. Like, I think they got down to like 14 at one point.
They did. And there was a couple moments where it's like, okay, where's the Cavs' typical fourth quarter effort?
It just didn't happen. Yeah,
it,
to be fair, it also didn't show up. LeBron just hit a bunch of weird mid-rangers.
That's true. It was a really weird game because, I mean, the Cavs struggled the most when it was LeBron and those bench lineups, which has been kind of the staple throughout
the
this postseason. Like, Those lineups have consistently been the best.
Yeah, I mean, so there's two symptoms there. I think one, they were missing wide open shots.
That doesn't help.
Like Korver, Fry, both got a ton of wide open looks, and they just weren't falling. Darren Williams got two or three wide open threes. A couple off the dribbles. They weren't super easy, but they weren't hard. Like, they're in his wheelhouse of shot making. And then I think the second is a twofold issue. The second one is the Cavaliers' game plan required the team to be a lot more athletic than that bench unit is. Like, they were
that's very true.
They were trapping hard, recovering, rotating like maniacs, especially that starting unit, which was just unbelievable on defense. And that game plan does not bode as well with Channing Frye and Kyle Korver and Darren Williams. So.
Yeah, Fry did not have his best defensive game, but
no.
I'm with you. I was very impressed by the defensive effort. I really liked the Cavs scheme. It was kind of what we were anticipating from them, but to see them come out and execute it of really trapping and blitzing the ball handlers, forcing other guys to make decisions. PJ Tucker ended up hitting a lot of his shots, but
I think that's
something you live with. The other thing the Raptors had going for them was Serge Ibaka taking those mid-rangers with about 20 seconds left on the shot clock. And even though he started hitting them, it really was nice to see those being the shots that the Cavs are surrendering. A lot of them are still open, and that's going to lead to ridicule. But overall, I think that's one of the better ways to neuter this Raptors offense.
Yeah, I think it was Zach Harper who tweeted out about the math problem. At one point, the Cavs and Raptors had made the exact same amount of field goals, but the Cavs had 18 more points.
That's the thing. The Cavs really didn't shoot well. Like,
no.
Kyrie had an efficient game as a result of getting to the free throw line, but he still shot only, I believe,
6 of 15.
Yeah, or 7 of 16.
Damn it.
3 of 8 from 3. The 10 assists was really nice. He had 3 turnovers early, but he made up for it. Looking at the plus minus, you don't see this often. Kyrie was a plus 32, and LeBron was a plus 16.
Yeah. I mean, it was all that bench unit that just killed LeBron. Yeah. I mean, this thing could have been a lot worse, and that's got to be a huge bummer for the Raptors fans. Like,
Kevin Love only went 5 of 13 from the field.
Yeah, I mean, and just you look at Fry, Williams, Shump, and Korver, all, like, you know, I think they went 4 of, like, 8, but honestly, it could have been worse.
Yeah, it really could have.
Like these were amazing looks they were surrendering. So, you know, I think if you're looking at stuff that might not persist, I mean, like, Tristan played his best game in maybe the season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean,
and even he didn't finish well offensively. Like, he struggled a little bit going 3 of 8.
Yeah. He was a terror on defense. And like, you really, really learn to appreciate Tristan's switchability on guards that aren't amazing shooters. Like, Lowry's a good shooter, but I feel like he needs just a little bit more time to pull.
Yeah.
Like, which
you can disrupt his rhythm.
You can disrupt his rhythm a little bit, even though his percentages are good. And DeRozan obviously is not interested in shooting threes. And when he can give you just that extra cushion, because like when he has to guard Steph Curry, he has to be on his hip. And it's just a little bit easier to get past. But like he was a maniac guarding Lowry and DeRozan on switches and boxing the Raptors out. Raptors ended up with 8 offensive rebounds, but I think 2 or 3 of them didn't come till garbage time when the game was pretty much over. And I felt like the Cavaliers won the rebounding battle last night overall, and that is hugely important for their ability to win games.
I disagree with one thing you said there, and that's that the game was pretty much over in the final minutes. The game's never over when Dante Jones is on the floor.
Hell yeah! I mean, we asked Faisal Kamisa this about who he might get ejected against. Turns out it was Norm.
Well, and kind that was Faisal's ish. Guess, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, kind of. That was kind of his pick. he defaulted to PJ Tucker, and so I'm not going to give him full credit because he gave me 2 answers. But yeah, Dante Jones getting fined $6,000 on his $9,000 salary. That's I know that this is hilarious. So just, but if you really look at it logistically, this doesn't seem legal. To fine a man 2/3 of his yearly income, that just doesn't seem like it. That there's got to be some pro labor law against this.
Yeah, it's hilarious too, because I think my favorite comment I saw on Twitter in reaction to that was Dante Jones is going to be like a kid at lunchtime back in school asking someone for lunch money. He's going to be at LeBron's locker.
Yeah, that was harsh. That was harsh. Yeah, it was.
Shout out to Harsh.
We love Harsh. It was a really interesting game. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about that I had been thinking, but it kind of was, and maybe it was confirmed earlier and I just missed it. But I think was it Marv on the call? Marv Albert?
I had the Raptors broadcast, so it was screaming that the game was rigged. There was missed calls everywhere.
Well, okay, let's just pretend it was Marv Albert then.
Okay,
he made some mention that Darren Williams had lost 10 pounds since he had gotten to Cleveland, and I just love that. Because
that seems like the opposite of what typically would happen.
Well, because
the food's good there, man.
Well, first off, he's leaving Dallas, which is, I mean, everything's bigger in Texas. But I remember when they first signed him, I was excited and I was talking to my friend Cameron. And Cameron, who has never really been a big Darren Williams fan, just responded with, "He looks like the kind of guy who always has Dorito dust on his fingers."
That seems very accurate.
And turns out, spot on. He lost 10 pounds just by having to work harder. That tells you what kind of product that he was giving the Dallas Mavericks in terms of keeping his body ready. And in fact,
those pregame Doritos.
Yeah, and I even noticed in the video that the Cavaliers posted of them working out on those Versa climbers.
Yeah.
At one point, LeBron was standing next to Darren while Darren was doing it, and Darren looked so miserable. And clearly, he just was not in very good shape to start this season, or his run with the Cavaliers, which is hilarious.
I guess that means he fits in, because this team has had a lackadaisical approach to this season, and it's really funny, because I've seen now 2 very contrasting takes. The one take that I heard, well, one with the Raptors broadcast, but then some people on Twitter as well, they were saying how game one was a show of how much the Cavs respected the Raptors, that they came out with a more intense effort. And then the other take is that the Cavs were just completely disrespectful. Between LeBron drinking, or not drinking, but pretending grabbing the beer on the sideline, the showboating. I saw a few people take exception to Kyrie dribbling, which is kind of like taking exception to the sun from rising. But yeah, it's funny because I think there's truth in both of those. I think on the one hand, the Cavs obviously came out with a more inspired effort than we've seen. Part of that might just be the fact that they actually got to practice and had some time to rest. But on the other hand, it really did seem like they wanted to clown the Raptors and put them in their place.
Yeah, I think like part of respect, it's sort of like LeBron saying that the Warriors and Cavs aren't a rivalry, is it's part of its head games. Exactly. You know, like just because they were making jokes doesn't necessarily mean they didn't respect them. In fact, sometimes it's them, you know, okay, let's go out there and beat the shit out of them and but make sure that we don't get a confident Raptors team coming in here for game two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've seen in the past that the Raptors can get shook mentally. And to their credit, I felt like they did bounce back quite a few times.
Always. It's insane. This game. No one, like, that's I mentioned that in the recap, is like, you know, if you're looking at this game as though it was like a death knell for Toronto, big mistake, because they literally do not care how much they lose by in the game one. They'll always come out and compete.
And they typically play a lot better. They play better when they're an underdog. Like, yeah, when they have expectations, they fall apart. But when they're an underdog, then it kind of feeds into the narrative that they like to push. The pressure's off of Lowry and DeRozan. So I anticipate them not really giving in a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that this team, one game, like, point differential couldn't reflect on the Raptors worse in the playoffs. Like, they're going to win their their three or four games in a series by like a combined 16 points and lose their games by a combined like 47.
Like, well, at least they kind of closed in the gap in garbage time to make it look a little more respectable.
So, like, yeah, this team's going to adjust. They're going to come out and fight. I thought that the fact that the Cavs only gave Lowry and DeRozan 9 combined free throws was probably the defining a factor of this game defensively.
Mm-hmm. It was really impressive. You could tell that they were making a conscious effort to disrupt the shots, but not to reach in and not to foul. And a couple of their free throw attempts that they got were off of very minimal contact, like DeRozan's first two there. I don't believe J.R. Smith touched him, but that's still the type of play that DeRozan can bait someone into. But yeah, overall, I thought they were very disciplined.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were awesome, especially with DeRozan, who, if he's not getting the line, he just doesn't matter. I really think that, like, he has not a ton of value if he's not getting to the line, because he's not going to score efficiently from the field. In this one, he went 7 of 16. He is not a great passer. Despite getting trapped, so just getting double-teamed at the point of attack and getting the easiest leak outs possible, he only had 2 assists. To 4 turnovers.
Yeah, the 4 turnovers was huge. Yeah. Because, as you said, he's kind of a capable passer at times, but if you trap him and you really put the pressure on him, those bad habits are going to kick in.
Yeah, there's a difference between passing under duress and passing when it's a little bit easier, when your options are clear.
I mean, it's the same thing that you were discussing the other day with shooting, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that that's a great
there's people
point.
That can create their own shot and shoot under duress, and then there's
okay
capable shooters that the Raptors basically are full of.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really hard to find really good shooters, especially since the Cavs and Warriors have all of them.
They really are selfish that way.
Yeah, but so yeah, it was really interesting. I thought the game plan was great by Lou, and Lou is like the king of, oh, this guy isn't a great shooter, we're going to ignore the ever-loving shit out of him.
And they do it on both ends. Like, they will completely disrespect someone offensively or defensively. Like, they will run every single play at you if you have a defensive deficiency. And if you aren't the most capable offensive player, like PJ Tucker, for example, we're going to let you take 11 shots in game one, which was 2 fewer than Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, you have 25 combined shots, or I guess let's just say that we have 36 combined shots for Norm Powell, PJ Tucker, and Serge Ibaka, and 39 for Lowry and DeRozan. I think that's a win. as opposed to the Cavaliers, where you have 49-62 for Love Thompson, or for Love James and Irving.
I'll take that.
Yeah, it was funny because in, you know, looking at the box score, your first instinct was to say that this was just a game where the role players let them down, but it was just actually just a total beating. That's why those guys got so many open shots, and they were able to find all the role players for open threes.
And this is why I think it's important to not, when you look at matchups, say, okay, how does point guard versus point guard defend? How does shooting guard versus shooting guard? Like, there are team game plans and things that you can do to make up for those deficiencies. And I think Tyronn Lue has proven over the last year and a bit here that in the playoffs, he is capable of coming up with these schemes that really are effective. And even though I feel like he's still probably not showing everything, as that was the case last year, he does come up with schemes that are good enough to get by the opposition, no matter who they're really playing.
Yeah, on both ends, really.
Yes.
My favorite thing to do right now with the Cavaliers to judge the effectiveness of their bench units isn't their plus minus, isn't their net rating. It's just to see how many threes they got up. because it kind of tells you how well the offense was flowing in a way. Because the more, if those guys get like five or six attempts, like the Pacers did such a good job of running those guys off the line until, you know, the end of game three. But for the most part, they did a good job. And in this game, in pretty limited minutes, because the starters played pretty heavy minutes outside of JR, who only played 22, surprisingly, which I guess I didn't mm-hmm. really notice in the moment. They got 11 threes up in pretty sparse minutes. So, like, that just tells you that not only were the stars getting their, you know, getting their offensive games humming, like every Cavs bench player at least got a few threes up within the flow of the offense.
Yeah, that was really nice to see. And I love JR taking a heat check on his first possession, basically.
Oh, it was awesome because on the play, they literally, so he went to set like a pin down screen. And I think it was DeRozan that just like two hands shoved him.
And
and he just got like knocked back like 4 feet beyond the 3-point line, and it's like, and I remember I was watching the moment, I was like, hey, and then the second that shove gives him a ton of room because he got thrown back basically, and right. And you know, whoever had the ball found him, and the second he touched the ball, I was like, oh, he's pissed off, he's shooting,
yeah.
And he canned it, which was really nice. I thought he had a pretty nice game even in his limited minutes. I was happy
with his defense. Yeah. I really thought he did play good defense in that game. He played good defense against the Pacers, even though he was a little limited with the hamstring, and you could tell he was favoring that leg. But yeah, overall, I think JR has played really well for someone that has struggled to kind of get into rhythm, because typically he needs to be really hitting his shots to be contributing on defense. And I thought it was nice to see that effort from him, even though he only had the four shots.
Yeah, another nice jump game, too.
Yeah, you know what? Quietly, they're getting really good production off the bench. Obviously, we talked about Fry's lack of defense in this game. But overall, I thought they got really valuable contributions off the bench. Darren Williams maybe could have hit a few more shots, but both of his threes were kind of in and out, and I thought he played well overall. They were finally running LeBron Williams pick and rolls.
Yeah, I saw Mort tweeted that last night, and that's something we've been calling it for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's kind of surprising, though, to see Richard Jefferson not play at all.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that as soon as I got done on my Darren Williams tangent.
All right.
Yeah, like the Darren, if you look at his synergy stats before the trade, he's one of the most efficient players in the league shooting the mid-ranger off the dribble, off a pick and roll. Mm-hmm. I think he was like in the 90th percentile on those shots. Yeah. So when they do run,
I think
run
he that, was like second or in the top three.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous. And so
it was like Steph, Darren Williams, and LeBron.
Which is ridiculous because Darren's really just not that good of a shooter. Like, I don't know why he's shooting so well off these pull-ups, but he is. And so when LeBron goes to set that screen, and it just, he sucks up so much of the attention of the defense because you can't give him a free roll. So Darren's going to get that free 15-footer whenever he wants. And he's someone who actually is as opposed to most bench ball handlers, he's someone you want taking that shot. He's actually able to be efficient with it. So him running that pick and roll puts him in a comfort zone. He had 4 assists. He never turns the ball over, I've noticed. Like, yeah, almost, most of the time, there's either a 0 or a 1 in the turnover column, which is really nice for him. The jump shot obviously wasn't there for him today, but even with a very simple line of 4 and 4 in 18 minutes, I thought he made his impact felt.
Yeah, it's kind of nice that both the Cavs point guards, I mean, Kyrie has a low turnover rate for the usage rate that he has and the amount of time that he has the ball. But both the Cavs point guards really do take care of the ball, which is nice.
Which is nice because LeBron doesn't.
No. I thought about going there and I was like, you know what? I don't think I'll go there, but thanks for doing it.
I wanted to make it. It's not to shit on LeBron. It was just a joke, but also he does have some bad turnover games. It's just part of what happens when you play as instinctive as he does and tries some pretty audacious passes. like that's a big part of it, is like LeBron tries stuff that Kyrie and Darren wouldn't dream try. Like they just wouldn't do it. So there's just going to be more turnovers, and the offense is also going to flow better with LeBron because he's amazing. So not crapping on LeBron, just
he also runs the offense and initiates it more than anyone.
Yeah, and but going back to the RJ thing, a DMP didn't even play in garbage time. What do you think's behind the lack of garbage time minutes? Because I thought that was interesting.
Well, the lack of garbage time minutes doesn't really surprise me, because during the game, as you mentioned, they got valuable minutes from Shumpert. They were getting valuable minutes from Williams, and there wasn't really any other wings that played significant minutes. Like, Derek Williams played 3 in garbage time, but it was basically Fry, Darren Williams, and Shumpert that got minutes off the bench, and Korver, of course. But once Jefferson basically hasn't played in significant minutes, at his age, you're probably best off just letting him rest. Like, I don't think there's any value in playing him in garbage time and potentially getting hurt. He's obviously proven that he can be a valuable contributor, but I just don't think you want to play him more minutes than you have to, because at some point they are going to need to rely on him.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I just wanted to hear your take on that, because Fry played garbage time, but he also played earlier in the game. And
we don't have another option.
Yeah, and you have Dante Jones, who can play the 3. You've got Shumpert, who was already in the game playing the 2, and Darren playing the 1. And you have Derek Williams, who has fresh legs and doesn't matter as much for this team in a potential finals matchup, to soak up those minutes at the power forward. So
it makes sense. He's not the Durant stopper?
He is the Durant stopper, of course. RJ is. I absolutely don't think this means he's not going to play in the rest of the playoffs. I think this is purely a matchup move, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. Like the Raptors have, like, Patrick Patterson's not going to kill you in the post. Jakob Poeltl is not in the rotation. PJ Tucker is a small ball 4. Damari Carroll is a small ball 4. Guys who aren't going just to beat the crap out of Kyle Korver or LeBron if they play those small lineups. Like, they can stick Kyle Korver on Damari Carroll with no downside.
Yeah, for sure.
So this is just a team that doesn't really call for RJ, and it does seem like this is going to be the way Ty Lue does his rotations. He's not going beyond 9.
No, he really isn't.
Which is fine. You should trim your rotations in the playoffs. I don't think you really need to play 10 guys, even if you have the option.
Yeah, it was really nice to see playoff garbage time, though. Although LeBron still played 41 minutes, which I'm sure people will get hung up on.
Yep, didn't care at all. in fact, you know, it's the, you know, I'll worry about LeBron's minutes when a series goes 7. And the only time a series will probably be going 7 this year is against the Warriors, in which case I won't be worrying about LeBron's minutes because he's going to need to play 45 a game anyway. Like, he's getting so much rest off these sweeps. And because
they're
going
to give extra minutes or extra time between games in the finals because they want everyone to be fresh.
Yeah, this is an interesting series in the sense that I'm pretty sure it's just every other day.
At least for the first 4 games it is.
Hold on. I'm looking at the schedule, and this cannot possibly be right on ESPN. It says game 4 is on May 7th and game 5 is on May 8th.
I don't think game 5 through 7 has actually been announced yet, but yes, I see that as well.
Yeah, that can't be right. Anyway, Yeah, so I'm not worried about the minutes at all. And in fact, it was funny because Dave McMiniman had an unbelievable podcast with Tyronn Lue that everyone should listen to after they're done listening to this one, obviously.
And after checking out our interview with Faisal Khamiza from earlier.
Of course.
That's fun.
Yeah, if you don't listen to our whole catalog before you go listen to that, you're not a good fan or listener.
you're a bad person, really.
Yeah, so it was funny. Lou was asked about managing LeBron's minutes, and he mentioned that he was given some flack for playing LeBron so much against the Pacers, and he had a really interesting answer, and it was something that I don't think had come out yet, but it was a tactical move, and not just because it's easier to play with LeBron. He was saying that he noticed that the Pacers were matching Paul George's minutes to LeBron's, which they were.
Oh.
And he was like, well, Paul George is guarding LeBron every possession, and LeBron isn't guarding.
Paul George is a human being.
Yeah, and LeBron James is not guarding Paul George every possession. So if I play LeBron for 44 minutes, Paul George is going to be dead at the end of games from having to guard LeBron for 44 minutes, and then LeBron gets to rest, you know, quote unquote, on the other side of the ball.
Like, outside of that game three comeback, I don't think I've seen LeBron look tired in the playoffs.
Yeah. So I just thought that was a really interesting move from Lou to give LeBron minutes, not just for lineup flexibility, but to, as an active deterrent of the other team's superstar, to get him tired. That was a really interesting little tidbit I don't think anyone had reported on. So, yeah, the LeBron, I mean, come on. I know he's getting up there, but Jesus, it's the playoffs. Like, he's supposed to play a lot. That's how this works.
Yeah, absolutely. And sorry to change subjects so quickly, but Mike Zavagnigo, I cannot pronounce his last name. I am so sorry. But Mike from Fear of the Sword just tweeted out Raptors corner threes in game one. Powell 1-for-4, Patterson 0-for-4, Tucker 0-for-3, DeRozan 0-for-1. Like, that is exactly who you want taking those shots.
Yeah.
They're not giving up quality shots. They're not giving up those corner threes to the guys that you don't want taking those shots.
Yep, it was a perfect game plan. It was actually executed really well. I couldn't believe how smartly the Cavaliers were swarming. There were only a couple possessions I saw where on the rotation they left a shooter open and two guys went to close out on him like they always do. That's a big Cavs bugaboo where like LeBron and JR will be darting after the shooter, which is kind of a recipe for disaster, but mostly that was avoided. I thought Love rotated really, really well in this game.
He had a great defensive game, in my opinion. He did a great job on Jonas early on, which is a key factor because you need Tristan playing against Ibaka. But yeah, he played well on switches. He played well in the post. He was active. He was trying to take charges. I was really impressed with him.
Yeah, normally his value defensively is just a lot more subtle because it revolves around his defensive rebounding and just ending possessions. But I just thought the way he was moving was really, really nice in this game. Like he cut off divers on the pick and roll. Like he tagged people and then got back to his man. Just was really active and light on his feet in this one. And I thought he deserved the shout out for having a really good game. And you mentioned Jonas Valanciunas, and
he's not very good, man.
Prior to this series, with our pod with Faisal, we asked if he had a place in this series, and after one game, it looks like the answer is no. This guy is not; he can't hang.
No, he really struggled in this game. Like there was that one play where he tried to hedge on Kyrie when they were running a pick and roll with Tristan, and he was so slow on it, and Kyrie basically was able to throw a bounce pass into Thompson, who was able to like dribble twice before dunking. And it's like, you can't be giving up those type of looks. Like he's just so slow to react. He got abused on both ends of the floor. And it was funny because the other play that kind of stands out in my mind is when Kyrie got trapped under the basket and basically like had a little pass fake on Jonas, which he bought on, and then hit a floater right over top of him.
Yeah,
hook shot.
Yeah, the one where Kyrie screened for LeBron and then slipped it. And LeBron kind of threaded that needle. Yeah, I mean, and he was slow-footed. He was really overly deliberate in the post. Part of being a good post player is attacking mismatches before the help comes. and mm-hmm. like just having a plan and doing it, you know, with some decisiveness. And he had nothing. I mean, at one point he got Kyrie on his hip in the block. LeBron goes to double down, and instead of spinning baseline, where Kyrie is not going to offer resistance, even if Kyrie wanted to, he wasn't going to offer resistance, and he doesn't want to.
No, he doesn't.
So instead of just going baseline, taking a step in and maybe even trying to go reverse or just do anything else, he decides to dribble out to the sideline, stiff arms LeBron in the face, and gets called for an offensive foul. Like,
that's not bad.
It is just a pathetic possession, and like it just was so indicative of his like complete lack of value on offense. I mean, if you can't kill Kevin Love, I mean, this was kind of similar to last year's Hawks series where it's like, okay, Al Horford is on the Hawks. He's ostensibly good. And they're playing him straight up with Kevin Love, sending no help, and he can't hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you do there. Like, you have to be able to hurt Kevin Love to beat this Cavs team.
Yeah, I completely agree. And just looking at some of the hustle stats, I had wrote about this before the series, but Kevin Love didn't have any deflections against the Pacers. He had two. He also contested 9 shots, which is pretty good for him. And looking at other hustle stats, good Lord, Tristan Thompson is a beast.
Yeah.
Two deflections. He recovered 4 loose balls. He contested 14 shots.
He just played the best game this season. I really think that, like, especially given the stakes. It just shows you the difference between someone like Jonas, who has this traditional skill set of, okay, I can post up and I can kind of protect the rim if I'm near the hoop and you're near me. And Tristan Thompson, who is this amorphous blob, like this, you know, rebounding, messy, switchy guy. And like, it just shows you who has the place in the league right now, and it's guys like Tristan Thompson. I mean, he abused Jonas. Jonas had 6 boards and only was able to play 21 minutes. Tristan was devastating on the offensive boards per usual, and getting 10 defensive rebounds is not unimportant for him.
No, not at all.
His defensive rebound rate, and I wrote about it, had cratered this year, gone down by like 4 or 5%, and that doesn't sound hugely important, but it actually is really, really impactful, especially on this Cavs team that needs Tristan and Kevin Love and LeBron to all be elite defensive rebounders.
Yeah, and that's a big part of their formula for beating the Warriors, because the two things that they have that can kind of level the playing field is slowing down pace, taking care of possessions, and getting extra possessions with their rebounding and preventing the Warriors from getting extra possessions on the defensive glass.
Yeah. I did want to talk about someone who I was thinking might present more of a problem than he did, and someone who you watch this Raptors team a lot more closely than I do because you live in Canada, and you write about the team a little bit, and you had mentioned to me that Corey Joseph had a really tough season, but his 10 minutes were awful.
they really were. Like, he's dropped off defensively.
He bothered
in a big
the Cavs last year. He really did, and he was a disaster in this game. In his 10 minutes, it was like his plus minus doesn't show up, but I mean, it was like, oh, this guy's he bricked a 3, just didn't look good, and I was just really surprised by that.
Yeah, it's it really hasn't been great for him, and that's another guy almost similar to Jonas that I wonder if they would be better off going with one of their younger guys instead. Like, I really think DeLon Wright might be able to give them more valuable minutes.
The Raptors fans love DeLon Wright, and I don't see it.
No, I really like DeLon Wright. He really takes care of the ball. He's very good defensively. I think he's like 6'5", 6'6". Just comes up with tons of steals, really sound defensively, and doesn't turn over the ball. He can't really shoot, and he can't really finish at the rim, but in terms of kind of running the team, he can do a really good job off the bench, and I think he can be a little more disruptive than Corey Joseph. Like, obviously, he played some of the garbage time. He played 8 minutes in game 1, but he was a plus 14 in those minutes.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do, because that bench did not do the job for them other than PJ Tucker. Patrick Patterson was awful. I mean, just awful for them. I mean, as bad as their starters were, and sometimes it felt like these bench guys, like, in more favorable matchups, by the way, still were just as bad. I mean, Tupac, one of seven, had a couple really ugly post-up fadeaways. It's like, what are you doing? And he didn't look great on defense. He got blown by a couple times. I just can't believe how bad the Raptors looked in this. I thought there was a chance we'd have a blowout, but it was like a wire-to-wire, top-to-bottom, bad effort.
I really was kind of worried that this would be a shot that the Cavs would blow just because they were off for so long. And Toronto would have been rested, although not for as long as the Cavs. But I just thought that they would be a lot closer
They weren't sharp at all. Their rebounding was not good.
I don't think the Cavs were necessarily that sharp. Like, I think they played with a ton of energy, and they were certainly sharp defensively. But I think they were rushing shots a little bit. They didn't execute as well as they could have offensively, which is funny for a game where they put up 116 points.
Yeah, well, there were lulls, I think. They would go through these, like, I think they ended every single quarter except, I guess, the first through third quarter. They ended them on, like, an 18-6 run, like, each quarter. Mm-hmm. And they had that, like, 10-0 spurt to start the game. So they'd had these little, like, death machine moments where for 2 minute stretches they just blow the game out, and then they'd kind of chill out a little bit and, you know, settle for some bad jumpers and maybe not run as much offense, and then they'd go back on their death machine. So it's an interesting dynamic, but honestly, I thought when they were locked in, they were just terrifying, and just proves that the Raptors do not have the personnel to guard them. And they also proved that even though, I mean, how different is this series? Does this Raptors team look in terms of how versatile it is if Damari Carroll never gets hurt?
I think that would make a big difference because Carroll really is a great 3-and-D option, or at least he was.
He can't that would move really, anymore. I mean, yeah, it's brutal.
He lost LeBron just off-ball baseline once. And that really reminded me of game one of last series. I think LeBron had a similar play to that where it's like, okay, how are you going to let LeBron catch the ball at the rim basically uncontested?
Yeah, I mean, like, I thought Thad Young moved better than Damari Carroll.
Man, Toronto has a lot of tough decisions coming up this summer.
Yeah, they do.
Not only do you have Ibaka, Lowry, Patterson, and Tucker that need contracts, but you're giving out a lot of money to Jonas Valanciunas, Damari Carroll, and Corey Joseph, who we've already brought up as three of kind of the glaring weaknesses there. I think those three combined are getting about $37 million or more.
Yeah, I mean, you hope that Joseph bounces back. Like, he's shown the propensity, but I mean, it seems like Carroll's cooked at this point. Obviously, you don't ever want to roll out modern medicine, but yeah, I mean, this payroll is going to get really expensive, and it's not just as simple as let's keep this good team together. It's let's spend a ton of money to keep this good team together that will never be great.
I think without signing Lowry, so their existing contracts, assuming Lowry opts out, is at about $76 million of the $110 million cap, and Lowry and Ibaka both stated that they aren't signing for less than the max. That was part of why OKC and Orlando traded Ibaka, is because they didn't feel he was worthwhile.
Ibaka's not going to get the max, is he? Unless the Raptors give it to him. There's not as much money as there used to be.
It's a really bad free agent crop.
Is it? I disagree.
From what
with
I've
that.
Been told,
I disagree with that because you have.
If you're assuming Steph and Durant don't move.
Of course. But hold on. Let's just take a look here. You have Paul Millsap, you have Blake Griffin, you have Gordon Hayward. All could be changing teams. You have Drew Holiday. You have Danilo. You've got potentially Wade hitting the market. You got George Hill hitting the market. You got Otto Porter hitting the market.
But still, we're not talking a lot of max guys there. Like, Porter will get it. Griffin will get it. Millsap, I don't know if he's going to get at his age.
There's less max space around, though, because everyone shot their wad last year.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Like, if you really think about it, there's probably only, like, six or seven teams that will maneuver their way to max space. Like, I guess, like, If you're
even if Ibaka doesn't get the max, though, like, he's going to get over 20 million. Like, he's going to get 20 to 25 million, I think.
Yeah, I think that you could see that. And if you're looking at potential destinations, it gets a little hard because, yeah, unless he wants to go to, like, Brooklyn. I guess Brooklyn could pay him big money if they wanted to.
That's kind of their strategy, right?
But it's not on the team's tough position. But he's not on the right timeline either. Like,
theoretically, he's 27.
Yeah, but, like, I think they're looking to sign guys who are, like, 23, 24, like Alan Crabb.
For sure.
Philly, no use there. Brooklyn, not useful there. Denver, he could be interesting.
Denver would be interesting. That would be a really nice fit.
Denver or Minnesota are two really interesting teams.
I could see Minnesota trying to get in on a lot of Raptors players. Like, I could see them trying to get Ibaka or Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work out, I could see them being in the running for Patterson.
Yeah. So they're certainly a wild card, but, like, I just don't think the market's going to be as hot as he wants it to be for him. And it'll be really interesting. Like, they do have a lot of tough decisions here, and it's not as simple as just keep them together or blow them apart now, because you have to factor in your owner's payroll. It's really easy to say, screw the owner's payroll, we're trying to win a title when you're Cleveland. You know, it's like, all right, Dan Gilbert, pay up. Pay up, sport.
Yeah, that's true.
This is what you owe. This is what you have to do to build a title winner. But to keep this core together is to almost certainly not win a title, because even when the Cavs fall off, it's not like you can wait them out. Lowry's getting older.
Mm-hmm. And the fans like to point out that the Raptors are, like, one of the five youngest teams or whatever in the league, but their core isn't.
Yeah, their,
like,
core is
Kyle
not.
Kyle Lowry's 31, DeRozan's 27, Ibaka's probably maybe 27. they're on the same timeline. Like, their core three is older on average than the Cavs core three. And I think that matters.
Yeah, it does. And even if they did wait out the Cavs, I think Milwaukee's coming. Sorry about that. My phone's going off. Yeah, Milwaukee's coming. I just think that these other younger teams are going to surpass them, and you can't just wait it out. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, if you have the owner's blessing, I think you bring everyone back, because this is the most successful era in Raptors history.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And there is some value winning. Yeah.
It's fun to follow a good team, so I get it. But yeah, it's going to be tough, and I think they're going to have to let Ibaka walk for sure, which is why they didn't pay a huge price for him, which is fine. But
man, see, I think Ibaka's the most likely to stay.
Really? More than Lowry?
I think he's more likely to stay than Lowry.
See, that doesn't work for me. I don't understand that, because if I'm not paying Lowry, I'm certainly not paying Ibaka.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point?
Well, I guess it would depend on if Ibaka wants to stay, if there's no Lowry, but... Yeah, as I said, there's no easy decisions.
But even if he wants to stay, what's the value in this? Like, I think you need to start your timeline over, right? I guess you don't have to go for a complete rebuild, but Lowry is a huge part of your identity.
You go young guys and DeRozan, I guess. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see them sign Ibaka and then try to package all their other pieces to get a point guard to replace Lowry.
Yeah, I mean...
Although I don't know what that nets you. Like, I don't know what... Corey Joseph or Carroll and Valanciunas can get.
Carroll has to be viewed as a negative asset at this point at his contract.
Man, that's rough.
Am I wrong?
Because he's such an easy guy to root for. No, you're probably right, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm amenable to being wrong on that, but it just seems like $15 million, not playing well on either end anymore, and not appearing to have the juice left in his legs to fix it.
It's tough. Yeah, he needs a trip to Germany.
Yeah, needs a Germany trip or a Miami trip, either one.
I'm not saying, but I'm saying.
Yeah. So, you know, just get your HGH however you need it. No one will be mad at you, Damari. Just wait till after the series to do it.
Was there anything that the Raptors did that kind of concerned you moving forward that you want the Cavs to either work on how they defended it, or something that you identified might be an issue?
No.
Damn. Because that felt like the logical next point to this conversation.
I was racking my brain while you were asking that question, because obviously I could tell where you were going with it. I was like, the Cavs got wide open shots whenever they worked for them.
Man.
And
it's... like when the Raptors beat the Cavs last year, they did it with, well, obviously the Cavs had a rough game and a half there. In game four, they came out in the second half and they really played well, but still ended up losing that. But they really outworked the Cavs. And Bismack Biyombo was a big part of that. He had that game where he had over 20 rebounds.
Gosh.
And just really made an impact with his energy. And I don't know who fills that role. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see anyone that's going to outwork Tristan in the series.
Yeah, I mean, you have that, and you also have the fact that even the good looks the Raptors got were by design.
Yeah, so, they really were.
So, I mean, if you're looking for a reason why this might not work moving forward, it's if the Cavs are a little less committed to the scheme. I think that's where you get burned, is you let Tucker and Ibaka get wide open shots, but also you let Lowry or DeRozan go off. I mean, Lowry had 20 and 11 on only three turnovers and only 13 shots.
Yeah, like he had a good game.
He had a good game.
That's the thing.
But he just didn't have an impactful game. Like, it didn't feel... I mean, he had the best plus-minus of any starter, but it wasn't like, holy crap, Lowry's killing them. It's like, oh, Lowry's doing okay. Like,
funny because it felt like him and DeRozan both had little stretches in the game where it's like, okay, they're kind of taking over. They're playing really well. Lowry, I believe, was in the first quarter and DeRozan in the second. But outside of that, you just don't notice them consistently.
No, and I mean, that's part of the game plan, right? That's why you trap them and get the ball out of their hands. And it's the Cavs will have trouble if one of those has a great game and Ibaka and Tucker and maybe Norm Powell go off. That's how the Cavs will get burned in this.
Yeah, you're probably right. And what did you think of Tucker's job on LeBron? Because obviously a lot has been made about him being brought in to Toronto to stop LeBron. Before the game, they were talking about how the Cavs desperately wanted Tucker and the Raptors got him from them. And now he's kind of going to be the secret weapon in the series. Obviously, LeBron had a great game, and that was on multiple defenders. But do you think he did a good job? Like, there were a couple possessions where I saw LeBron settle for not as great shots, but at the same time, that's feels like a product of the Cavs having a lead, because that's something LeBron does when they're up. He starts dancing with the ball and taking fadeaway mid-rangers because
having
he
fun.
Can.
Having yeah. fun being dumb. I think it's really hard to evaluate Tucker because
he's giving up a lot of size.
Giving up a lot of size.
That was something that was evident.
But also, like, it's just really hard to evaluate an individual defensive matchup when I thought the team defense was so poor from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the fact that, like, it didn't feel like one guy could affect it because their rotations were so bad everywhere else. I mean, the Cavs got good looks on, like, the first, like, eight possessions of the game.
They really did.
Like, it's like Tucker can do a nice job in isolation, but that's not what LeBron does. LeBron is not an isolation player. He's a pick and roll player. He's a screener. He is a passer. He's a fast break leader. He's
a make the right decision player.
And yeah.
That was something that...
And the Raptors made it really easy to make the right decision in this game. Like, he only had four assists, so it's not like he was just like diamond like crazy, but like... Everyone just was able to move the ball, and it was easy. I mean, you can't make it that easy. The Cavs had 26 assists, and I mean, I thought Valanciunas was horrible off ball. I thought Patterson was not great. I thought Norman Powell wasn't great.
Patterson's a guy that I expect to play better throughout the series because he is a good defensive player.
Yeah, that is the one area where you go, okay, maybe that guy fixes it.
And he's a better shooter than he indicated. He's a streaky shooter, so him going over four from the corner isn't necessarily surprising, but he's a guy that can just as easily go 4-4-4.
Yeah, so I think that I thought DeRozan was bad off the ball, so it's kind of hard to evaluate Tucker. I guess in isolation he did okay, but he's given up 4 3-4 inches and probably like 40 pounds, even though he was overweight when he came here.
he's not a LeBron stopper.
Yeah, I mean, this was my problem with the whole idea of even when the Cavs wanted to trade for him was like, okay, like, is this guy going to guard Kevin Durant? He's 6'5".
Yeah, that was my thing. I really wasn't in on Tucker, partly because he was overweight, but I just don't. You're not stopping these elite guys.
No, there is like, no.
You
stopper.
Have to outscore and them.
Even Kawhi,
you just have to outscore them.
Even Kawhi is not a pure stopper. Like, just no one's a stopper against the best players in the world. Like,
no, Durant is still going to put up an efficient 30 points per game on Kawhi.
Yeah, like all you want to do is make it as inefficient as possible. And Tucker wasn't able to do that against LeBron today, or last night. And I just don't really. I mean, I think it's more about what those guys do as opposed to what the individual defenders do. You have to scheme. It has to be a team defensive effort. And the Raptors in this game neither kept LeBron at bay, nor did they prevent the other guys on the team from hurting them. And when that happens, you're just in so much trouble. And this is why the Hawks have gotten killed the last 2 years, because they try to do everything, and you can't do everything. I think you have to
selectively pick and choose what you're going to give up. You can't try to defend everything, because then you end up defending nothing.
Yeah, that's what the Cavs love it when you collapse down on them in the pick and roll, or you know, but don't all the way commit to keeping the ball out of LeBron's hands. Like, it's just like you can't play a base defense against them. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Now, LeBron said in the Pacers series that he would have rather been at Coachella, or wished he was at Coachella. Do you think he wanted to be at the Met Gala last night?
Well, apparently
is that not
he's
really a
scene. Well, he's apparently a wine drinker. He said that's why he didn't take a sip of the beer.
Someone baseline has to be sitting there with a glass of wine next game.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think that should be part of the. That's a game ops opportunity right there.
It really is.
So
wine night at the Cube.
Yeah, shout out to the Cavs. You can give the Chase Down like half the profits, rough estimate.
Yeah, we'll settle for half.
Yeah, I think we're cutting you a great deal for the idea. This is a podcast, so it's copyrighted now.
I can see LeBron as he ages becoming, because he's a weird guy.
Total weirdo.
I think we've made our stance on that pretty clear over the last few episodes, that LeBron is a weirdo.
Yep.
I could see him being, as he ages, kind of like a Boris Diaw figure.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously going to be more dominant as a player because that's just his personality. But I can see like his Instagram posts and stuff like that starting to take that feel.
Yeah. But I don't know if he can ever be as nonchalant as Boris.
Well, no one can.
Boris ostensibly might not be aware that he's playing in the playoffs right now.
There's a good chance of that. Did you hear the story about him when he was with the Suns testing his vertical and flip-flops? He showed up and Amari was doing the vertical thing or whatever. I'm not sure what that device is called.
We'll call it the vertical thing.
Yeah, so Amari did a great job on it, apparently. One of the highest verticals they had seen. Boris walks in. I believe it was an espresso. He had an espresso in his hand and he was in flip-flops. And he asks, "What's that thing?" And they're like, "Oh, well, we use it to measure vertical." So he kicks off his flip-flops, puts down his espresso and clears it. The entire thing.
That's amazing. Also worth noting that you pronounce espresso like Michael Scott pronounces espresso in the Cafe Disco episode of The Office.
You know what? You'll get over it.
I'm not proud of you. Yeah, Boris is awesome. Did you see the Twitter? Someone tweeted out. It was a picture of Boris at halftime of Jazz Clippers game 5, and it was like, just watch Boris during. He didn't warm up at all. Just stood there smirking with the ball tucked under his arm. I love that guy, man.
He would have been a great Cav. He would have fit in with Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye pretty well, I think.
Yeah, those. I mean, I think that's that's our Boris Diaw is RJ and Channing. I can't imagine the shenanigans RJ gets into when he has all the excess energy that comes with a DNP.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's got to be. I mean, he's probably just tortures Channing whenever he's on the bench. I think Channing's my favorite in that pairing, by the way.
I think so, too, because Jefferson's so out there. Mm-hmm. Channing is, like, almost a little bit of a straight man, but at the same time, he's also really funny.
He's very funny, but in a way that, like, he, like, plays up the fact that he's sensitive and gets irritated with RJ in a way that's really, really funny. And, yeah, I just love those two. And, like, honestly, if even if, the, like, RJ can't retire, he just can't.
No, he can't.
Like, I'm going to be so genuinely sad when the day comes that one of those two isn't on the team anymore.
Yeah. I hope RJ basically takes on the Dante Jones role.
Oh, that'd be fun. But he's not, I think.
He's not that type of player.
Well, actually, that's not necessarily true. Because, I mean, remember, like, earlier this year, he was just getting into a fight with someone. Like, got into it with the refs or, like, a technical, like, every other game. So, maybe he's got a little bit more heat than we want to ascribe to him. But he's just got that voice, that gentle, soft Richard Jefferson voice that makes you think that he's not a hard ass. But maybe he kind of is.
His voice, and I've said this before, but it still sounds like he's trying to make fun of how white people sound.
100%.
Like, he sounds like
it's Dave Chappelle's white guy.
Yeah. Oh, man. And before we wrap this up, Tristan Thompson, feeling confident. Chris Fedor just tweeted out that Tristan Thompson claims he's ready for the free money if the Raptors keep fouling him on purpose. He went 5 of 6 at the line. He's feeling his free throw shot right now.
There you go. Probably more than LeBron is. No, it's fine. I'm down. I love it. I love the excitement. I love the confidence. Like, that guy, I want him to be, like, as cocky as possible.
It seems like he only really hits those free throws when people are going intentionally to the haka. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember Brad Stevens did it, and, like, he just hit all of them. Maybe it's that those are the possessions where he wasn't working to get, like, 16 offensive rebounds and deflections prior to the foul.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he just doesn't like the disrespect, but I'm glad that he was hitting those. It was really nice to see.
Yeah, no, for sure. And yeah, I gotta love Tristan. I feel about as good as you can feel about him, as I felt all season after that win. I mean, he looks so good. He looks so fresh and rested, and that's the
him and Kyrie both look good physically.
That's the kind of player that you need to beat the Warriors. It's going to be such an uphill battle to do that. So, I mean, if you're not firing on all cylinders, they're in a ton of trouble. So, this is the first time they've really looked like they're firing on all cylinders for a while.
So, you feel confident about game 2 win?
Not necessarily, because I just... Also, like, they came out and, like, made their statement, and, like, was the
right.
Like, what is the David Griffin thing? It's like, we hate it when people don't quit.
Oh.
Like.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Like, they're going to expect the Raptors to come out there, like, shell-shocked. And if the Raptors do their thing, it could be a competitive game. But also, it's just a bad matchup for them.
It really
for
is.
For the Raps. And as the Cavs are a bad matchup for a lot of teams. And they don't have someone as good as Paul George.
This is true.
Yeah, like, I mean, I mentioned that in the recap. It's like, that's a huge difference. Is Paul George, a Paul George quality player, gets you through bad runs by the opponent.
Yeah.
And because he's matchup independent.
I think that's basically sums up the series. Raptors are a very good team that matches up poorly, similar to the Hawks. But hopefully the Cavs take care of business. This is probably a good place to wrap it up. So to all our listeners, we really do appreciate all the feedback. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Android, and on Stitcher. You can find the link on the Almighty Baller website, as well as when we tweet it out. So thanks again for listening, you guys. And as always, go Cavs.